Hey, it's Chris, and welcome to the Between Dreams podcast, a place where we have conversations with people who are not only dreaming big dreams, but doing the things to make them reality. Big dreams are important, but what matters most is what we do between dreams. Today's guest is a longtime friend of the Between Dreams world, a return guest, and also a great personal friend of mine. He has this way of taking big ideas and just not seeing the limitations, or seeing the limitations and just disregarding the idea that they are going to even have a chance to slow him down. Huge ideas, and he makes them all come to life. It's absolutely incredible. We dive into things like how he recreated one of Houdini's biggest stunts in front of thousands of people, leveraging that experience to get a show of his own on the Discovery Channel. And if you stick around towards the end of this conversation, you'll hear one of my favorite adventures, probably of my entire life, where our guest today invited me to Las Vegas on a grand adventure that led to him doing what he does best, taking these massive ideas, making it reality, and talking his way and inviting me to join him into David Copperfield's Magic Museum. One of the most incredible experiences of my entire life. I've been honored to watch him accomplish some of these amazing feats, and even more honored to have this conversation with him. This is my latest conversation with Lee Terbosek. I think every time we chat, we have some super cool like story, and it's always these ideas of building blocks and the work that you have put in through the years and then pay off in these big moments. And you have some amazingly big moments, like not like, oh, this is a big personal accomplishment. Some of the stuff that you've done between live experiences, TV shows are more than just, oh, I accomplished my dream. It's like, no, I created something that thousands, millions of people got to experience in one way or another.
Yeah, and so, it is cool to look back on the moments, the beats of the career, and you know, because you just, it's always, for me, it's constantly about what's next, what's down the line, what's 5 years out for these projects. So, but yeah, it's sometimes it's refreshing to stop and look back and, you know, and kind of smile about a little bit about these huge moments that, you know, that go by so quick.
Yeah. Yeah. So give us a little bit of, without going deep into it, because I feel like we've talked about some of those big ones with you like three times on the podcast.
Yeah, I know.
So let's give an overview of some of those big moments. You know, what are the bit, you know, the Houdini experience for sure. The Houdini show for sure. Let's hear it from you.
Yeah. So the Houdini 100 that took place in 2016, that little daring idea of doing that whole insane, replication of a stunt of Harry Houdini at the same date and time and location, how that all coalesced, that, you know, kind of kicked the door open for me in terms of what I wanted to do next. And it grew into me creating bringing back to life my show 52 Up Close that I now have done for the last 7 years in a hotel. Which is kind of insane to me that I've been doing it that long. And it's now become the longest running magic show in production in Pittsburgh history, which is super cool. It's these moments, though, like you said, they're like little capsules in time. And each one kind of in a way is a result of the other one. Hmm. And 52 Up Close is what helped create Liberty Magic, which is a venue in downtown Pittsburgh that caters to only magic and mentalism and the variety arts, more magic than anything else. And it's one of the, I think it's the only city or organization owned magic theater in the world. Now there's other magic theaters, obviously Magic Castle and Chicago Magic Lounge and these other ones around the world. But Liberty Magic is owned by the Cultural Trust, and that's a nonprofit, and that's the arts of the entire art community of downtown Pittsburgh. So having it, you know, being able to create a venue for magic with an organization that is literally just set up for success. You know, when you're going out on these other venues, there's always the juggling of money and you know, and who's running, who's making the decisions. At the end of the day, it was the trust that was really spearheading that project. And I was along to add all of the mix that would create a perfect magic venue. And so that in and of itself, when I was working and creating that in 2018, I was also filming the television series for Discovery Channel, Houdini's Last Secrets. So I was like compound, like layering things all at one time. But now, fast forward, since all these things have blossomed, it is really cool to look back on them and know that Liberty Magic has now hosted some of the greatest magicians in the world. I mean, we've had Guy Hollingsworth there doing At the Card Table for 2 months. We are a little flame that's gathering these, you know, magicians that don't have a home to, or didn't have a home to go and hang and meet magicians and understand how you get into the art, or people that are more advanced, and they can even see more of the advanced stuff at Liberty Magic. So it's getting these magicians that are being able to, that were just tinkering in their room or learning magic how I did when I was a kid, they were able to now come to a place and experience it with like a group. So that, I think all these things that have been happening in Pittsburgh from these crazy ideas that I put in motion, seeing what's come out of it is just, you know, icing on the cake for me.
Yeah. I think when I think of you, I think of big ideas that a lot of people might have, big ideas like that, that they're like, well, that's just too big and I'm not I don't know how to do it.
Right.
I feel like all the ideas that I feel like that I see you do are like, I'm like, oh man, that seems like if I would have thought of that, I would have just dismissed it as not possible. So where does that decision in your mind go from? And do you ever have ideas that you're like, all right, I think this is too big? Or did you just get blessed with not having that part of a brain?
I don't have that part of a brain. I don't see sides in what I do.
Yeah.
I understand that it's a part of it, but I try not to let that influence my decisions. I kind of look back on when I became a magician when I was literally 10 years old. Obviously, I was clueless when I was becoming a magician, but that was a big moment to want to be a magician, you know, in grade school. I didn't know how that was going to be perceived, but all my friends from school became my initial audiences. And over the years, they become all my initial, you know, some of my fans too. They still come out to all my shows, which was super cool. But back then, that step of like saying that you're going to be a magician, and then even saying that, like, I'm going to take it to these other levels, I was saying that as a young kid. So today, when I'm talking about these big ideas that I'm going to do, they just seem normal to me in a weird way. They seem like they're just what I should be doing. You know, when I discovered the photo of Harry Houdini hanging in downtown Pittsburgh in, you know, that was in 2010. And the date in the photo was 1916. So I did the math really quick and I was like, well, 100 years, 2016. But at right that moment, that was 2010. So I had about 5 years to work up to that idea coming to fruition. But I decided at that moment that that was going to happen. It wasn't like I wasn't ready for it. It was, I will be ready for it. I will put in the work over the next 5 years because I know what it will take to pull that thing off. And that's what I've been really, really focusing on, is just putting in the work every day. I'm working on something that's going to have a payoff, whether it's a month from now, whether it's 6 months from now, whether it's 6 years from now. I'm always looking, I'm always making sure I'm on that path.
It comes natural to you, it seems like. But if you had to give advice to somebody who it didn't come natural to, what do you think you would say? If they're like, yeah, but I don't, what if it does, you know, because there's an idea, I think, in normal people's mind that are like, yeah, but what if it doesn't work?
Well, that's a learning situation. Yeah. So that's the thing. You've got to make mistakes. Yeah. And I've made a lot of mistakes. It's just, you know, I don't let the mistakes bog me down. You know, I can name quite a few little mistakes that I've made along my career that when I look back on it now, I'm almost glad I made them, because it reinforced the work that I needed to do so that I didn't make that mistake again. I learned from it. Also, having, I believe, in the creative arts as an entertainer, and I think any entertainer, not just being a magician, but maybe for magic it's a little more important, having a mentor, having somebody that has gone through this and may have a good angle on what the problem you're presented with. I have the best mentor. I always say this. I really do. I lucked out as a young magician. I have a guy named Paul Gertner, who is a world-renowned, one of the best in the world magicians. So he has seen everything. He has done The Tonight Show. He was the personal teacher of magic for Johnny Carson. So it's like, there is no bigger level than being on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson back in, you know, in the early 90s. And Paul did that 3 times. So me being able to pick his brain and ask him, hey, what was it like while you were sitting backstage? You know, what was it like 2 days prior? How did you get onto the show in the first place? You know, and it was hearing all his intimate stories and his advice and his emotions, where he was in his career and what he was about to do next on those big moments. And those things, I grabbed up those stories and I just threw them into my head, because I knew that no one else could have those types of stories for references. And so when I was then presented with opportunities to do television, like Houdini's Last Secrets for the Discovery Channel, and as crazy as that combo was, when the network called me and said, "You're cast, we're in. P.S., you're going to be doing the Water Torture Cell in like 4 months. So here we go." I was like, oh, no, like, what did I just do? But then I just remembered, like, what would it be like if, like, Paul was getting the call for, like, to be on The Tonight Show? That's where I was. I was like, he knew he was ready for it. I knew I was ready for it. I went right back into my Houdini 100 style of training. You know, I was hanging upside down and I was back in the gym and doing all the breath exercises and doing the water, you know, water breath holds. I was, you know, I was putting in the work. So that when I stepped on set that day with George Hardine, a member of the Houdini family, I was able to represent what I was cast to do, and that was portray Harry on film. And so that was running through my mind, you know, even when I was making the show. And there were some moments that really threw me in making a television series. One of them that I don't think I've ever talked about publicly. A few people know about this, but the day I was supposed to film the bullet catch on one of the episodes was the same day that the Tree of Life massacre happened in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And that day I was gearing up to do the bullet catch, which guns, you know, safety, you know, I mean, like there's all these moving bad things that can happen with that, those types of stunts. And to wake up that morning to hear about something that was happening in my hometown in Pittsburgh while I'm filming in Austin, Texas, my mind wasn't in to do this magic trick for cameras. I was thinking about what was going on back in my hometown. Yeah. So I luckily had an amazing director who saw that I was not in the frame of mind to be doing that piece of magic that day. And luckily they pushed it. And I didn't know at the time, but they did that for me. Mm-hmm. But they kicked it to a later date. So these things do happen when you're working on these types of projects. And it's just understanding that you're there to do what you do best. And if you put in the work, you'll be able to navigate these things.
Yeah. Yeah, that the building blocks and the foundation. Do you have another example of something that in the moment felt failure or, you know, setback, or something that in the moment you're like, or like something that just bummed you out? You're like, ah, man, I was really hoping that was going to be the thing that worked or worked faster. Didn't work out that time, but in hindsight, you're like, man, I'm glad that for me, I got an Ellen appearance. You know, one of my biggest things that ever was an Ellen appearance. And it took like 5 years for it to happen. That.
I was texting and, you like after it viewed, man. I was so excited.
Yeah, yeah, it was amazing. And I was so happy that it took 5 years because like where I was in my performance career and things, like it was so much more valuable when it happened than if it would have happened right when I first started talking to them. So I was so thankful. Like, looking back, like it was a bummer because it kept falling through for 5 years.
Right. Yeah.
And now looking back, I'm like, oh, when it happened, it was perfect because I was doing more college shows. It was like way more valuable to me when it happened.
What the one thing that happened to me that bummed me out when it happened, but ultimately gave me so much momentum to conquer these other things down the line, I was on America's Got Talent. But if you blink, you will miss me.
Yeah.
Because I was on season 10 and I was on the year after Matt. And they, you know, they were comparing me to Matt. And Matt killed it. And I said that. I said, like, you know, Matt destroyed, you know, when he was here last season. I gave him all the respect and praise. But I knew that the similarities were very strong. And so therefore, I knew the producers, they told me behind the scenes, like, listen, Lee, wrong season, bad timing, you know? And yeah. And so my appearance on that show was very quick. So, so what sucked about that is that I knew that I was not going very far on that show, but yet I had to promote it and act like I was. And that's what kind of like, wasn't that fun? Because I knew the results of where, and I also knew the why. And that's, I think that was, and it was kind of weird to have to constantly, like, I didn't want to have to constantly explain that. And like, it's one of those things that was like, once I did it and realized it wasn't going to be what I dreamt it would be, I was already dreaming of something new. Like I'd already, in a way, I'd already moved on from, and it had not even aired yet. But because I knew what was to come of it and how people were going to get excited for me, and everything, and they would see me, but then I was going to disappear and you know, and I was going to be gone off the show. So that was one of those things that definitely was, you know, kind of a reality awakening, but I learned so much from doing the show, from being on that huge stage, doing magic for, you know, Howard Stern. I mean, I was this close doing a card trick for Howard Stern and Heidi Klum. And so that pressure and knowing that, like, how even backstage before I was even announced, how like confident I was to walk out on stage because I knew I had put in the work and I knew I was ready to go down and wow them. And I did. I got a standing ovation. You know, I was losing my mind when Howard Stern was standing up and giving me an applause. But I just knew that, you know, after it was all said and done, like, although that didn't all get aired the way I thought it would, And the producers, you know, did what they did. I thought it was kind of cool that, like, at a later season, they called me and they wanted me to come back on the show. And because of the magic community and how tight we are, I had already heard that Shin Lim was going to do America's Got Talent. He was signed up for that season. And I just told him, like, listen, I had done that a couple years ago. Thanks for the call back. P.S. I already know Shin's going to do the show. And you're probably going to be giving him the award. And I was right. I knew not to go on that, you know, even try to do go back on it, you know, like a return to America's Got Talent, just because I knew that Chin was going to dominate. And so that was just me kind of like going, seeing it and going, I'm going to get out of the way of that train because I know he's how good he was. Yeah. And at the time, I focused on what I was doing, what I'd always been wanting to work on, which was Houdini 100. Mm. And then of course onto Houdini's Last Secrets for Discovery. So it was all kind of a blessing in disguise in a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so cool. It's so cool looking back and hearing those stories and especially in magic community. I think for me, I'm so adjacent to all.
Yeah, you are. We've known each other through the college market.
Yeah.
You know, and of course our touring schedules would sometimes line up and we would be in a similar city together, or when you lived in Los Angeles and I was coming through, we would always hang. But you know, it's really funny when I did AGT all those years back, do you know who went on before me?
Oh man. I'm trying to think of how you know,
a singer songwriter.
Oh man. I'm trying to think of how you're going to tie this all up.
You remember Mitch Clark? Do you know Mitch Clark, right? Singer songwriter from Nashville. I could have swore you were still friends with him. back then through AFCO and the NACA days.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine, we did a show together where we would do a dueling show where he was a singer songwriter and I would do magic. But when we got cast on, when I got cast on AGT, I called to tell him that. He was so excited for me. And like 2 weeks later, he got called from the same talent booker that saw me and wanted him as well. Nice. And so now we were both on this kind of this journey together. And when we went on the show, he went on literally right before me.
Nice.
So I got to cheer him on backstage with Nick Cannon, which was kind of wild.
Yeah.
So.
Amazing. Yeah. The old college entertainment, the APCA, NACA crew. I missed that world a little bit.
I know. Yeah. It was a fun little world, you know.
Yeah.
It was all these, you know, such creative, so much talent. I was always blown away by the level of talent in both organizations. I thought there was a lot of really strong entertainment, not even just in magic. Yeah. I mean, the singers that were in those markets were phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
amazing. Jugglers too. The jugglers in that market were phenomenal.
The whole, all the circles, amazing. Yeah. And think about like Matt, that world of, you know, it's incredible seeing what everyone's, I think it's so cool now seeing what everyone's doing. Cause everyone's I don't want to say everyone's moved on as if like, oh, that world is the first step. Cause a lot of my friends are still there and doing incredible work.
A lot of people to get into these industries and do very, very well at them. And it's almost kind of hard to get out of them.
Yeah.
You know, the college market, the cruise ship market, the corporate market. You know, I retired from the college market, touring the college market, like chasing the schools and doing the APCAs and the NACAs. I got out in 2015 just because I thought it was time. I'd been in for quite some time and did, you know, my fair share of traveling and shows. And I just got sick of the traveling, to be completely honest with you. I love the shows, but I love being in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. 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 I certainly hit a moment of burnout on it. My unicycles and big heavy crap got me.
Magic shows were another one, like magic shows and jugglers. We had like the worst, like stuff to carry with us everywhere.
The new segment is called The Entertainer's Approach.
Okay.
And I think entertainers and performers have a unique approach to everything from marketing to everything that we do has a distinct thing. And in my mind, that thing is creating an experience for the audience is number one priority. It's not an artist who is doing it for self-satisfaction. There's a part of that, of course.
Right.
But as a true entertainer, the entertainer serves the audience. So I wanted to get your thought and what rings true in your mind, because you're creating a lot of these experiences that are your dream. It's your dream to create this experience, but I think particularly you really focus on creating a memorable and unique experience for your audience. So as your kind of guiding principle, what is your thought and your approach when you're creating something for audiences to experience that is your like guiding principle of making sure that it gives the audience the best experience?
I think I always try to strive for when I'm putting stuff together, whether it's, you know, 52 Up Close at a hotel, whether it's Houdini 100 with a stunt, or even when I'm creating this another show called The Life and Death of Harry Houdini, where I play Harry on stage, I'm always looking for the most authentic version of that experience. Meaning, did I hit every corner? Did I look under every rock? Is there angles to this I'm not seeing? I look back on the product and the experience, and I'm very subjective of the moments and the beats. How could it be better in these moments? I think all artists are always looking at this. You know, how are we always trying to make the jokes better or land, you know, or even be more fresh or stuff like that? So when I'm putting together like the Houdini show that I did in 2019. Bringing it back later this year, I really try to tie in as many important details to the subject matter. And like one of them for the Houdini show is you know, I wanted to have, because the show itself takes place, when I explain this to the audience, it takes place in Harry Houdini's actual house. So whenever the audience that evening gathers at Liberty Magic, sits in their seats in the normal theater, the stage itself will be set up in to look like Harry Houdini's home. And so the audience is then kind of told in advance what to experience. Like, you're going to be going to 278 West 113th Street in Harlem, which was Harry Houdini's home. But the way I try to make it more, even more authentic, is by, because I'm a Houdini collector and historian, I will have on stage in the actual theater pieces of Houdini's life. So I own a piece of Harry Houdini's art that will be appearing on stage in the show, which will be in the backdrop. So it's like, I love sprinkling in these little things that sometimes are just for me, but sometimes I work them into the show. And I don't want to give too many details on what I have coming up, but I've gone really down a twisted road of sprinkling in these real things into these, you know, quote unquote, make-believe moments. And so that's what I try to do. When I'm trying to build these experiences and have people remember them, I want to make sure if there's some way to tie it all together in the audience's brain, as well as, you know, making the show even, you know, cooler. Those are what I'm always after. I'm trying to find those little nuggets that are just like, oh my God, can't believe he had that, or that was in the show, or he was able to, you know, link that full circle. It's those types of details that I think when you really stop and look and analyze what you're doing, and you're asking why all the time, those are the answers I try to hit.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, I love that, the details, and I think that's a perfect recap of it, of the little details that could almost be overlooked, but when the culmination of it comes together is so vital.
And they call it bumping the lamp, which are you familiar with?
Yeah.
Bumping the lamp. Yeah. And I really, on everything I do, I make sure that I'm bumping the lamp. You know, I learned that understanding of what that was a long time ago. Yeah. And understanding the scene in which it even takes place in the movie, in Roger Rabbit, and growing up and loving Roger Rabbit, and then, you know, learning what that was, and then going back and rewatching Roger Rabbit and seeing that scene, which it's all based upon, of bumping the lamp, that gave me the understanding of what needs to be done in order to do this at a high level. Because that's what everybody, that's the people that are doing it at a high level, that's what they're doing. And so you need to be doing it too.
Yeah, so good. And I'll be sure to not spoil anything, but I remember I was with you in Las Vegas, and again, we won't spoil
any. No, we can talk about it, man. Spoilers. I'm very hesitant on, because that project got stalled out because of COVID.
Yeah.
I did it.
Yeah, I won't spoil any of the inside, but I want to hit on what you said of, like, you go to the extreme to get that little thing. And we're in.
I'll tell it. But I'm still, believe it or not,
you can hold back as much as you need to.
This summer and this fall, those things are going to play a part in it. I'm working on a documentary, and I'm working on a live show. That those things that we did back in 2020 are now going to get finally used. So I can, but I can talk about how I got you to film for me. And when I was in Los Angeles, when we were shooting at the Magic Castle in the Houdini seance room, which was super cool. I think I was the last person to ever do anything in that room before they tore it all down and redid it all. So we filmed there. And then we were in Vegas to film with George Hardin, Houdini. And then we ended up, so my whole plan on the whole kit and caboodle was that the Houdini show that I am doing in Liberty Magic, when I designed it, it was kind of built behind this concept or this idea about Harry's living room and the bookcase that was in his living room that housed all of our crown jewels of magic, his collection, and about that disappearing, that bookcase disappeared from 278 West 113th Street, Harry's house, and it reappeared in David Copperfield's museum that people now are familiar with, now know about. I wasn't really a lot of talk about that back then. It was kind of super hush-hush.
Yeah.
But David obviously has this extremely well, you know, it's really amazing museum of magic. And that is where the bookcase is now stationed. It is in the Houdini section in the museum. And it was, I had to, in a way, I'll let it out. I had to hack my way in. And so the way I did that is I knew I wanted to go and see this museum, but I knew that the only way to do that was through David Copperfield. And you know, and at the time, like I didn't know David Copperfield. And so, but I had done a Houdini series that I had heard that he either saw or knew about or even liked. But I knew that I did know one thing. I knew how big of a Houdini fan he was. And so I knew if I could put a Houdini in front of him, the world could open up in a weird way. And that's what I tried to do. So I asked George to meet me in Las Vegas with, you know, and I brought you with me, and there were some of our other friends that joined us. But the whole goal was to put George in front of David Copperfield. That was the goal. So we arranged for the you know, to sit front row. We sat front row at David Copperfield's show. And then we went, obviously we went after the show, we were in the green room or in that little hallway. David comes down, we do the photo, he does a trick, he signs some autographs. And then if you remember, I said, David, as he was walking away, I said, do you remember this? Do you know who this face is? Do you recognize this face? And I'm pointing to George. And he came very close and he said, and he, his eyes lit up. And as he realized that it was, you know, he was said George Hardin. And he said, oh my God, you're a Houdini. And that was when I knew what was about to take place. And of course, David, being an incredible human being he is, was so gracious, and he invited all of us on a private tour of the museum. Of course, I was just like geeking out because I knew I was going to get to go into the museum and see everything, but I wanted to really see the bookcase. I was all about the book because it was such a crucial part of the show that I'd been working on. So for us to go through the museum all together with David and George and get to the bookcase and do that and get that content and, you know, and that experience. And to be honest with you, when I'm crafting my experiences, I've been taking notes from David Copperfield. I mean, you can recall how incredible was that experience.
Yeah.
You know, from what he sets up from the very beginning, from when we got there.
Yeah.
You know, and throughout it. But, you know, so all those things are now finally coming back into play because of the hiccup from the pandemic. But yeah, man, it was just yeah, a cool experience that I'll never forget.
Yeah. And I, again, I didn't want to reveal any parts of it that need to be revealed, but the point that I wanted to make was those details that you made sure were right. And that risk that, oh, this might not work.
Yeah.
And because you kind of mentioned, oh, you called at him to say, do you recognize him? He was literally back turned, like walking away. You were just like, you just like Hail Mary'd it. You're like, I cannot let this just go. So that was
amazing. I would have been kicking myself for not trying.
Yeah.
And because I did try, I mean, it created like a better relationship with me and David, and it got us into the thing and see the stuff and gave me this incredible mind altering moment with the bookcase and David. And the fact that David takes the photo.
Yeah.
Icing on the cake.
Yeah. It's amazing. And yeah, so like that commitment, and that's what I wanted to double down on and, you know, give you the praise for it. And also people that are listening to understand that, like, commit to the bit, you know, it's like, I want to do this thing.
100%.
David Copperfield's going to walk away.
I know.
Are you going to yell after him? Or are you going to let him walk? What are you going to watch him walk away?
I was at least giving it a shot, man. Cause even if he said like, you know, like I'm busy tonight or, you know, whatever, but you don't know unless you try. And so I was just willing to try, even if it made me look like an idiot, but it didn't, and it worked. And, you know, we had an incredible time, and it was an incredible moment. And now looking back on it, I've continued to live each project the same way. Each idea that I come up with or I'm presented with, I just say, hey, listen, it's got to be a literally like me yelling to David, hey, well, you know, it's got to be that Hail Mary for me to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I always try to wrap these up with what advice do you have for somebody who wants to, you know, make something important? And that's it. It's like, pay attention to details, and details matter, and like take pride in the work that you're doing. And then when there's opportunities,
go for it.
They're going to be walking by you.
Mm-hmm. They really
are not going to stop. And it's up to us to put ourselves into an uncomfortable position to make them happen. That's what you've been doing as long as I've known you. And that's why I always love chatting and hearing about what you're up to next.
Thanks, man.
Because I know there are a lot of ideas that cross a lot of our minds, and we just let them walk on by, and you go out, stop them, and then amplify them. It's always amazing. So appreciate you sharing.
Thanks, man. Absolutely.
Where do you want to send people that want to dig into some of the work you're doing, either like Liberty Magic or your hotel show or wherever?
So you can obviously follow me on Instagram at Lee Trebosic. My website, leetrebosic.com, has all my dates and upcoming public shows. 52upclose.com is for my hotel performance and show, my residency in Pittsburgh. Liberty Magic is funded and operated through the Cultural Trust, and their entire schedule can be found on thetrust.org. Is their main site where you can find Liberty Magic, as because they own over 20 different theaters in Pittsburgh, one of them being Liberty, and you can find all the amazing acts that are going to be appearing there. I will be appearing there as well later this year with my Houdini show, Life and Death of Harry Houdini. And I also perform my other magic show there called In Plain Slight. So I have 52 Up Close at Hotel Monaco, and then I have two shows that I do at Liberty Magic. And I'm trying to think what else is going on. And then if you want to watch any of the Houdini's Last Secrets episodes, you can find out on Discovery Plus, Amazon Prime, as well as Apple. Just type in Houdini's Last Secrets. And then the most recent thing I'd like to plug is a thing I did during the pandemic with the History Channel, and it was called History's Greatest Mysteries, and it's hosted by Lawrence Fishburne. And I am on the Houdini episode. It is in season 2. It's a 2-hour incredible documentary that I worked with the History Channel and BBC, filming it remotely because of the pandemic. But on the show, I after watching it, it is one of the best Houdini documentaries I've ever watched. And I'm just not saying that because I'm on it. I'm saying it because I've seen all of them, and I know how good they are. But this one has done very, very well. And on it as well as Penn and Teller. And Teller even talks. And so he doesn't talk very often on camera. And when he does, he sometimes does the Wilson. But on this, and in this case, he's talking, and it's no hiding of the mouth, anything like that. But it's for me, it was amazing because the show in the later part of the documentary, there's a cut where it's Teller talking about Harry Houdini, me talking about Harry Houdini, Penn Jillette talking about Harry Houdini. I don't know. That's incredible. That's craziness to me. So that was a really amazing moment in that show. But so check that as well. And if you're ever in Pittsburgh, look me up and say hi.
Amazing. All right. That's so good. Thanks always for sharing epic stories. And certainly for including me in some of them along the ride.
We'll do more.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Between Dreams podcast. If you're listening on a platform that allows ratings, reviews, or for you to follow the show, it would be amazing for you to do so. That helps us to continue to bring amazing conversations like this to you. So thank you to Lee for returning to the show, and thank you for listening and making it to the end. That's it for now. Thank you and goodbye.